And good to have you with us today on Cresta in the Afternoon. I am Jerry Usher in for Al today, and as a Knight of Columbus, I have been very excited in recent days and weeks to be following the process for the potential beatification of Father Michael J. McGivney, the founder of the Knights of Columbus. And Pope Francis has approved a miracle that is attributed to Father McGivney, paving the way for the beatification, the first step in the process toward hopefully one day soon being a canonized saint in the Catholic Church. 5 years ago, Daniel and Michelle Shackle prayed through Father McGivney's intercession that their unborn son would survive despite his diagnosis of fetal hydrops. The condition disappeared, and he is now a healthy and active little boy. And his father, Daniel, joins us here on the program today to talk about that. Daniel, welcome to Cresta in the Afternoon.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for all you do to spread the Catholic faith.
Well, tell us a little bit about your family and, you know, where your son is in the birth order and kind of set the whole stage for our conversation here.
Well, Father McGivney's parents had 13 children, and my son Michael is our number 13. So we have children ranging from age 27 down to 5 years old, and our youngest is Michael.
Wow, that's fantastic. What a beautiful parallel between your family and Father McGivney's family with the 13 kids. So obviously you had been through 12 other pregnancies before this one. At what point in the pregnancy with Michael did you first get the diagnosis, and you know, were there any signs before that that something was wrong?
There were no signs before that that something was wrong, and we've had, of course, anybody with a large family would probably say they've lost some children along the way, so we actually have had more than 13 pregnancies, but God in His mercy, for some reason, decided to help us keep this one. So, yeah, we didn't have really any indication that anything was wrong until our first ultrasound in week 11 of the pregnancy.
What I'm not familiar with this particular diagnosis, and I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly, fetal hydrops. Can you explain for our listeners what that is, please, to the best of your knowledge?
I guess the best way to explain it is that his body was just full of fluid. His little chest was like a balloon. He had fluid all around his body under his skin. It was like he was just retaining enormous amounts of fluid. His organs just looked like, you know, like his lungs were little crumpled up pieces of paper floating in a sea of fluid in his body. And fetal hydrops can be treatable if it can be linked to a certain number of causes. However, we ran all the tests and everything to try to find a cause for him, and there was no cause other than a chromosomal abnormality, which is uncurable. So that's why ours was uncurable, because it was tied to his Down syndrome.
What along the way here, what advice or options are doctors sharing with you as you're discovering this and proceeding forward?
Well, it was kind of a progression. Obviously, my wife was going to the midwives. They did the ultrasound. They saw that there was some physical abnormalities on the ultrasound as far as some markers possibly for a chromosomal abnormality. And they recommended that we do some advanced DNA testing to see what it was. So they drew some of my wife's blood and tested it and confirmed that he had trisomy 21, and we normally don't do those kind of tests because we would never have an abortion anyway, but they talked her into it. They said, look, if that's spina bifida or something like that that we can correct in utero, then this test is important. We can determine if we can help him. So we went ahead and had those tests done, and after the test, they recommended that we go to the high-risk doctors at the local university medical center to have further testing done. We had genetic counselors talk to us and everything, and they scheduled another ultrasound with those high-risk doctors. And after that ultrasound, the doctor came in and sat down with us and pulled up the ultrasound and showed us what I described a minute ago about the fluid all over in his body, and said that she had been doing this for 30 years and had never seen a child survive this diagnosis. And she's a very accomplished doctor, very kind lady. She does surgeries all the time on babies in utero. So she'd been doing this for a long time. It hit us pretty hard, and she told us, look, I was raised Catholic. I know what you think about abortion, but this is not really an abortion because there's no hope. So we have two options, basically, and one is to terminate the pregnancy now, and the other option is to just carry the child until he dies on his own, and then we will have an induced stillbirth. So those were the options she gave us, and then they brought in some grief counselors to talk about things, obviously. And then we were left to struggle with that for the next few days about the diagnosis, obviously.
Cresta in the Afternoon, I'm Jerry Usher in for Al today, speaking with Daniel Shackle. He is the father, along with his wife Michelle, the mother of the baby, the beautiful baby that was the miracle that was approved by the Vatican, by Pope Francis, for the beatification of Father Michael J. McGivney, who is the founder of the Knights of Columbus. So I was going to ask you that, Daniel, and you kind of alluded to it already. Basically, given that abortion was not an option, I suppose for a time anyway, until the miracle happened, you probably were anticipating that that little Michael would not survive. Is that accurate? Safe to say?
That would be the logical conclusion, yes. And that's kind of what we were struggling with. I guess the doctor made me angry, suggesting that I kill my child. So I was, I guess you would say, a little bit rebellious. I had made a comment to my wife that I don't know who she thinks she is, but we have a trip planned to Fatima in a few weeks. And there's no such thing as no hope and things like that. And looking back on it, I think that's crazy. Why would I say things like that? But I guess it was just grace that God was giving us at the moment. And she, having had a stillbirth before, obviously was very emotionally distraught about the thought of going through all of that again. And also there's other conditions that can go along with this. There's something called mirror syndrome, where she could actually develop a condition similar to the baby. She could develop a high drops-like condition herself. So she was obviously trying to talk me off the ledge a little bit, saying, hey, look, the doctor's worried about my health and these other things too, and you shouldn't be angry with her. But we had a lot of really deep, heart-wrenching discussions between the two of us. And I remember one night, she was taking a bath, and she came out and was just very sad. She lay down on the floor and was crying. And, you know, as a father, you sit there and you have a child that looks like they're going to die, and your wife is so beside herself, you know, and what do you do in that moment? There's nothing you can do but turn to prayer. And so I just kind of went over in the corner and sat in a chair in our bedroom and just had, I guess, what I could describe as kind of an agony in the garden type of moment. You know, I didn't want to be where I was. I didn't want to go through this. I didn't want to see my wife go through this. My children were obviously very upset that they were going to lose a sibling as well. They were very excited about the child. Up to that point, we had named baby Ben. We were going to name him Benedict Ives after her grandfather. So, you know, I basically just prayed, Lord, you know, let this cup pass from me, if it be your will. And then I asked Father McGivney, who has always been kind of a patron of our family for 15 or 20 years, to pray for him. And I said, if you will pray for him, we will name him after you. And so I got up and told my wife what I had done. And she said, I really wanted to name him after my grandfather. But by the next morning, She was completely on board with asking Father McGivney to help us. And we emailed a lot of our contacts and friends and said, hey, look, this is the situation with our son. We found out a few days ago. We would really appreciate your prayers. We ask you to pray through Father McGivney for him to be healed. And so that's kind of how the prayer part came about.
Approximately how long was it after that, I guess you call it that deal you made with Father McGivney, which I love spiritual deals with the saints, but how long then before it was determined that that your son had been cured?
So our diagnosis, when we were told there was 0% chance, was February 25th. And honestly, I didn't write down all the dates behind that. It wasn't important at the time. In fact, we didn't write any of this stuff down until after he was born, and we got to looking back at at what had happened, and we just thought, man, this is an amazing story. We need to tell somebody about it. So we started writing things down. So I would say probably my prayer to Father McGivney was somewhere between, you know, February 25th and the beginning of March. And
okay.
Then we had another ultrasound because we were due to go to Europe on the 12th. So we had another ultrasound on the 4th so that she could get permission to travel by air, since she was pregnant with a sick baby. And then we left for Rome on the 12th.
What an amazing story, and I'm so blessed and honored, and we all are, Daniel, that we get to have you share this with us, because it's not every day that such a story gets to be shared on Catholic radio. We've got about...
I never thought I would even know any... Sorry, I never thought I would ever know anybody in my position, not to mention be in it.
Right. Yeah, I imagine so. You know, real quickly, how is little Michael doing? And the family must be, all of the other siblings must have just been overjoyed at what happened.
They are overjoyed, and we never asked for a cure for the Down syndrome. Whenever we were told that he had Down syndrome initially, I had told the doctor, what a blessing for our family. Because I always saw that as, you know, Down syndrome people are some of the most friendly, loving, and happiest people I've ever met in my life. And I thought it was just a great blessing for my other children to be able to grow up around someone like that and caring for them. And I just thought it would give a whole new level of love to our children. And he has. I mean, he's kind of our little family mascot. He's 5 years old now. We can understand him pretty well, but due to the Down syndrome, he doesn't talk as well as a normal five-year-old does, but in every other respect, he's a normal five-year-old. He's mischievous. He's jumping on trampolines. He's playing practical jokes on his brothers and sisters. He loves to make people laugh. He's honest. I'm not just saying this because I know you'd expect me to say it, but he is honestly just a complete joy to have in our family.
Well, Daniel, thank you so much for sharing this with us. We are so grateful, and we share your gratitude to the Lord for all that he has done for you and your wonderful, beautiful, large family. May you all be blessed. Thank you for your time. We appreciate it so much.
Praise be Jesus Christ. Thank you.
Now and forever. This is Cresta in the Afternoon. Monday is the Feast of Saints Peter and Paul. We're going to talk with Steve Ray about why they have a feast day on the same day and a little bit about each of them. So please stay with us. I'm Jerry Usher in for Al Cresta.